This is the Norris Group's Real Estate Investor Radio Show, the award-winning show dedicated to thought leaders shaping the real estate industry and local experts revealing their insider tips to succeed in an ever-changing real estate market. Hosted by author, investor, and hard money lender, Bruce Norris.
On November 5th, 2021, the Norris Group proudly presented our 14th annual I Survived Real Estate charity event. Industry experts joined Bruce and Aaron Norris to discuss evolving industry trends, real estate bubbles, inflation, and opportunities emerging for real estate professionals. All proceeds from the event benefit Make-A-Wish and St. Jude Children's Research Hospital. We want to thank our platinum partners, San Diego Creative Investors Association, Wilson Investment Properties, UDirect IRA Services. See isurvivedrealestate.com for event details, information on all our generous sponsors, watch the video uninterrupted, and to connect with our speakers.
Cornelius, this is a question for you, and it's an important one because it ties into a few different things, but immigration policy. You know, here in California, we basically shut down the construction industry for 10 years. All those people who are skilled labor may have moved into other markets, maybe moved into other industries, and now we're experiencing an increase. Jobs not a lot of people like. Is the building industry preparing for a huge wage inflation in the construction industry, and how do we offset it?
Absolutely. It's something that's in strong demand is these construction jobs. I mean, on a month-to-month basis, the National Association of Home Builders say about 300,000 to 400,000 jobs in construction are vacant. 30% of the construction industry is by immigration workers. We need to definitely have a national conversation about immigration. It's impacting our industry the most. So yes, the immigration, particularly in California, is important. And overall, the workforce development in this space is critical, critical for us to meet our housing goals.
Okay, got a lot of good questions. Is there anything on the horizon that could create a significant increase in inventory and how that affects pricing? Even if rates creep up a little bit, the low inventory seems like it could absorb some buyers' loss due to being priced out by higher rates. So pricing should remain strong, right? Can you please touch on inventory and pricing?
State's trying to do a lot with like the lot splits and stuff to, you know, in California to try to create a little more inventory and take away some of this local control. I don't think it happens quickly. And with the building costs and the rest, I don't see a large supply of inventory coming.
Yeah, the Turner Center at UC Berkeley says only 2% of lots this would apply to based on setback requirements, wildfire, and other rules that this law has. So only 2% in the whole entire state. So very small number.
And whereas, to my earlier point, whereas in a recession in the past, you would have seen some pickup in foreclosures, and that would have been a moderating influence on prices within the market. Now, with all the consumer protections related to preventing foreclosure, you don't get that same cyclical effect. But, you know, sounds harsh relative to people losing their home, but that's a function of them losing their job first, which is really the driver.
And, you know, the building for investment, you know, talking about rent control, which isn't just a California thing, it's happening in other places, right? California has the lowest rents in the nation. People are looking at me like I'm crazy right now, right?
Yeah.
as a function of price, right?
So you have the highest prices in the country.
Because we have the highest prices. So as an investor, I get the lowest return, right?
Yeah.
So if you think about rent should be a function of price. Right. Yeah. And I'm encouraged to build rentals because of the return on investment I'm going to get. And therefore, the price I am charging for rent as a function of the capital I have to put out to create that rental is the worst in the nation. And we're talking about rent control in the state that has the lowest rent as a function of price in the nation. It's crazy. We're going exactly the opposite direction we need to go. We need everyone talking about the fact that California has the lowest rents, and we need to fix that. And we need to bring rents more in line with prices, or we need to bring prices more in line with rents. But that's the question that needs to happen, is how do you bring those two closer together? We have a choice in California. We either need to bring rents up, or we need to bring prices down. It's a simple binary choice. You put in rent control, you're going to make that all worse, and you're going to have even less investment in the state, and the whole situation is going to get worse. We're going to have even fewer housing units. We're going to have less affordable housing. It's going to get worse. The question can't be about, I understand people can't afford this rent. It's a problem. People can't afford these prices. It's a problem. So do we bring down prices? Do we bring up rents? It's got to be one of the two. And I got to tell you, bringing down prices, we have, what, 65%, 69%, I think, home ownership in California. I should look in my app. That's 70%, 65, 70% of the population of California don't want prices to come down. That's the fundamental issue with affordable housing in California. 70% of people want to see their prices go up.
It's probably less than that just in California, but that's, you know, say 60, something like that. But how would you artificially make a market go down if it's a free market?
It's not a free market.
Okay. Can you elaborate on that?
So mortgage rates today, right?
Right.
So remove the Fed, remove Fannie, remove Freddie, remove all the government backing from mortgage. We would have a very different market. I'm not saying we should, and I'm not saying we should bring prices down, because I think it would cause a lot of pain, and I don't think anybody votes for that. And we at least apparently live in a democracy, right? So I don't think it happens, but we need to have realistic conversations about it and understand the choices we're making. All these people, we've got a lot of folks locally that run around and, you know, I won't name the nonprofit, but the nonprofit has two missions, right? One is to protect and preserve the local area. So they come out against every housing project and want to add rules and costs and afford, you know, more and more and more stuff they want to add to every housing project. So they make it ridiculously expensive to build, and they're going to sue you under CEQA and all the rest if you want to build housing here. And their other mandate is affordable housing. I mean, it's the most hypocritical, stupid, you know, dual mandate I've ever heard of. And yet you hear that everywhere. You know, you talk to Californians, and here's the interesting thing, right? We as Californians we elect people to the state, and we say we care about progressive issues. We care about affordability. So you would get the state putting in place rules, right, to take away authority from the local jurisdictions to try to help bring housing costs down. But those same people that elected those folks at the state level that said, hey, fix this, make it more affordable, this isn't okay, show up at all the meetings to, you know, try to, you know, stop the local housing in their area. And, oh, it's going to, you know, it's going to hurt this and it's going to hurt that. We're so hypocritical about this. Every single Californian is a complete hypocrite when it comes to affordable housing and home prices. We all want our prices to go up, and we all believe that there should be affordable housing. Those two things are mutually exclusive.
Okay. I have a lot of good questions, and we only have about 15 minutes left, so I'm only going to have time for a few.
I'm glad your throat's going.
High horse.
Your throat's doing good, man.
Yeah, it sure is. Asset value question. If stagflation seems most likely, a deflationary period with asset values staying flat or continuing to rise and interest rates stay historically low or decline, what is the constraining factor to runaway asset values? Debt, affordability, do these just get solved with government intervention?
That's Amen. Over my pay grade. That's got to be Doug.
Doug.
Well, one of the impacts of current monetary policy has been to inflate the value of assets. And I think that when the Fed starts to address the question of measured inflation, and I make that distinction because people don't think of asset appreciation as an inflation, but it in fact is, when the Fed starts to tighten, that will change some of those asset valuations. And to Sean's point about who starts screaming about things, When prices change, you'll hear about it. And that's why it takes Paul Volcker to fix the problem. Somebody that is resolute in returning market relationships back to where things like interest rates are determined by arm's length transactions by parties that are willing as opposed to under duress. And today, you can't tell me what the real interest rate is because the Fed's intervention is specific to affect where rates are. So you don't actually know. And Sean was making that point about government intervention in housing and the price of houses. When you legislatively or regulatorily introduce restrictions into the market, then you distort the pricing fundamentals. So at the end of the day, I think it, when the economic historians write, say 50 years from now, write about this period of monetary policy, you're going to be very critical of the Fed, suggesting it is at the root of some of the income distribution problems, because the inflation of those asset valuations all go to households who have assets to be inflated. And that's not the poor. And that's not low income households. That's middle and upper income households that are seeing the impact of that. So I think certainly monetary policy has a significant impact.
Andrew brings up also a great point about property taxes in cities. And Cornelius, maybe you have some insight into this. They must feel like it's Christmas. In Texas, as an example, I have a friend who bought less than 2 years ago for $625, relocation for a new job in Jacksonville, Florida. He is now in escrow for his Austin home for $1.35 million. It doubled in less than 2 years. And in states like Texas, that's a huge bump to their coffers. How are they handling this? In some parts of Florida, I know there's discussion about them lowering property taxes. Is California doing that?
We have Prop 13 in California, which caps property taxes. But one of the challenges that we have, as I said, these impact fees. So these various governmental entities are now funding their general fund with all these impact fees. Additionally, we have a lot of special districts in our state. So this is the flood control district, the park district, the community college district, the transit district, who also add on to your property tax bill. So it's really, it's a maze and Byzantine system here where we're funding local government pretty much as a de facto housing tax at this point. And that needs to be addressed at a statewide level as well.
Has anybody instituted like a CalPERS retirement impact fee? Not yet. It's coming. I forget what Prop 15 was in California. Do you think Prop 15 in California that was narrowly defeated will eventually get passed? And if so, please talk about the adverse impact it will have.
I think I might be referring to the rent control measure that we were
I think so. I think so.
That was on the ballot twice, and we were able to defeat that. I know folks are talking about bringing that back again. So that's a bad policy. Rent control will make a bad situation worse. There was also Prop 19 on the ballot last year, which allowed you to transfer your property tax base, which is very helpful for a lot of folks to, leave, for example, the Bay Area and move to Sacramento and not have to worry about their property tax base changing.
I'm going to make the next
customers are making a killing on that one right now.
I'm going to make a few quick comments because there's some questions. One is, should I lock in my loan now? I'd say, yeah. Why try to wait in time to market perfectly? It's pretty stupid low right now. So
I know, but now I'm wondering if I should have waited for that 1%.
I am really hoping we don't see that anytime soon, because I think it's as the after effect of something really bad. So please nobody hope for that one. Please go home and pray that I'm wrong.
You can always refi if it gets the 1%. Don't stress. And then when it comes to builder, there was a builder question, should I move forward with construction in California? I think double the time frame that you think it's going to take. Assume you have to get really organized and all over your contractors. And if your contractors are not plugged in and in the know of how bad it is, you're going to have to manhandle like your construction project. I'm just surprised. I hadn't heard 1 year for appliances. That's new and a little concerning. But we've had to adjust on the fly. Like we've got air conditioners that have been in port for 3 weeks and we had to switch brands just so we could move along and get things done. And so that impact, you know, you're going to holding costs are going to cost longer. Things are going to cost. We've had garage doors go up 6 times this year. So you just never know which category is going to be upset. So just assume it's going to cost quite a bit more, double the time frame. And if you're still comfortable with what you're doing, great. If not, sell to somebody else who wants to take that journey and don't stress about it.
Well, you know, the other thing that comes up into play with the clients, especially, and myself, I'm in a 1031 exchange right now. Well, what's the odds of that getting finished on time? It may not happen, and it would be nobody's fault. You can't get appliances for a year? Well, so I wonder how the IRS is going to deal with that, because that is a systemic issue, not anybody's fault.
We asked the question last week, too. Yep. We're technically still in a state of emergency, but the IRS has not posted the COVID-related supply chain disruption as something that will count. So sorry about it. It's not going to work. Dad, we are rounding out the evening. Would you like to close us out?
Well, I just want to thank, first of all, my son. His courage that he has displayed this year is awesome. The industry and how he's been supported, I really appreciate all of that. And this event has meant so much. It was his brainchild. You know, he comes up to me, you know, with some of these ideas, you know, why don't we do this? And this was one of them. Why don't we have a charity event? And why don't we have the leaders of the real estate world in the United States on a panel every year? And yeah, the first time I heard that, I was like, what? And now I love it. I look forward to it. And I think because of the group of investors that we've had, you know, it was interesting when we first did it, people showed up and they weren't really sure what it was. It wasn't a seminar. So what is it? And they really just was on, okay, well, we trust you. We show up. So 450 people show up in formals and tuxes and going, okay, well, what's tonight about? And it was so fun. And it's really become our industry ball, is what it amounts to. And I miss it not doing it live. The first year I remember standing up and I said, are there any investors here? Would you stand up? And 450 people stood up all dressed. And I looked at the panel and I said, I just wanted you to know what an investor looked like. Because at the time we were the bad guy. We were being pointed to as, okay, you're the guys that caused all the foreclosures and all that. And that was a speculator. That was not the room full of people that you have in front of you. And so it's been a great journey. I've made some great friends along the way. And I get to ask questions of these guys that I don't know the answers to. And that's really good. So thank you all for participating for another year. And it's great that we're raising some money for people that have much less fortune than we have in our life. And so our wall at the office is got tons of pictures of people's lives that we all collectively have impacted in a very favorable way. So thank you from the bottom of my heart.
You typically ask one final question.
Okay. What's the one thing you'd like to see happen in the next 12 months? What would be on the top of your list? Each and every one of you, or you can pass either way.
I'll start. I would really like to see the construction industry go for manufacturing inside. It's green, 3D printing, wall packs. I think it's time to get a little bit more creative in the construction industry. And I think we're going to see it in the next 5 to 10 years. I'm pretty excited.
Okay. Doug? You got to do your sound.
Sorry. Well, the first thing that you have to have if you're going to build a house or an apartment is a piece of land. And if there were some way to have a national wave of land development reform that freed up land and lowered costs, that would be a huge change for the affordability of housing to the conversation we've had about housing affordability. I don't expect it, but that would be awesome.
Okay. Yeah, this is wish list time. Cornelius?
Oh, so many things. I would say in the short term and immediately, with all the money that the federal government have provided to the states for COVID, it would be nice if they would use that money to hold off on fees and use that as an economic incentive for folks to go in and say, hey, I want to build an ADU, no fees. Hey, I want to build housing, no fees. So all the millions of dollars that the state and local governments have in their coffers right now, thanks to the federal government, no fees, and use it as a stimulus for to jumpstart home building and home construction.
I like that. Sean?
I would love to see more focus on facts and more focus on compromise by both parties, and to understand that that at the end of the day, you know, a house divided, you know, this is a great big world, and we compete with a lot of folks, and we have a lot of advantages by being the world's reserve currency. And we have a lot of advantages that I think we have are very at risk of losing if we're not all rowing the boat in the same direction. And I would just encourage anybody who's using language about the other side to dial it way down and think a lot more about compromise and meeting in the middle.
And Casey?
I'd really like to see, first of all, thank you for having me on the show. It's been so great. I pinged Aaron and just thanked him for including me. But for me, it's really about modernizing the transaction and making it simpler for an agent and for a consumer. For as many advances as mortgage and title and the sales process have gone through COVID, it's still a pretty archaic process, and we need to modernize to where consumers are today.
Joey, would you like to have a voice in this?
Actually, I just want to say thank you to everybody. It came together so fast. Everybody jumping on the panel, all the sponsors, all the individual donors. It means so much to us here at the Norris Group. And, you know, I'm the junior member here, but I get to talk to a lot of you. And, you know, a lot of times, you know, maybe they're a little too reserved to talk to you about certain things or Aaron. And so I get a little bit more of the real investor. And I really do appreciate everything that you guys do and all the support that you guys show us in our events, in our meetings, and especially here with I Survive Real Estate. Thank you.
All right. I'll wrap up with the same thing I've said for the last dozen years. I would like every elected official to stop being a Democrat or a Republican and first be an American, period.
Deal. Wow. 7 on the dot. Did you do that on purpose?
Yeah.
It's Florida time. It's 10 o'clock here. I get it. But hey, times change this weekend. Don't forget that.
That's right. I'll be walking in the light instead of the dark.
Thank you so much, panel, for being here. It's just been awesome. Per usual, 2 hours flies by very quickly. And Sean, your voice came back. Amazing.
That's great.
Yeah.
Probably.
And he's going to be up at 2 in the morning thinking too.
our gold sponsors tonight that came in early, Think Realty, Inland Empire Board of Real Estate, Realty 411, Phoebe, Keller Williams Corona, Keystone CPA, Las Brisas Escrow, Lavis Tax Associates, NorCalRIA, NSDREI. Thank you so much. I really appreciate it. Hopefully next year we will bring back the Roni Award, and we will be seeing you live at the Nixon Library. When the video comes out, we'll shoot an email to everybody if you could help us spread the word. And we've raised over $43,000 so far. We'd love to see that go a lot higher. So thanks, guys. Have a great weekend. Change your clocks. Don't forget. And we'll see you next year.
Okay. Bye-bye, everybody.
Bye. We'd also like to thank our gold sponsors, Inland Empire Board of Real Estate, Keller Williams Corona, Keystone CPA Inc., Las Brisas Escrow, Lavis Tax Wealth Management, NorCalRIA, NSDREI, Pasadena Phoebe, Realty 411, and Think Realty Magazine. See isurvivedrealestate.com for event details, information on all our generous sponsors, watch the video uninterrupted, and to connect with our speakers.
For more information on hard money loans and upcoming events with the Norris Group, check out thenorrisgroup.com. For information on passive investing with trust deeds, visit tngtrustdeeds.com.
The Norris Group originates and services loans in California and Florida under California DRE License 01219911, Florida Mortgage Lender License 1577, and NMLS License 1623669. For more information on hard money lending, go to thenorrisgroup.com and click the Hard Money tab.